The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Monday, the 22nd of October, 2018. On the podcast today, I have Robert Price, Executive Chairman of Highlands Natural Resources, HNR, sicker there, and Robert discusses the progress across the portfolio of their projects from all and gas to helium assets and technologies. I also have on Ian Smith, Chief Executive Officer of 1PM Group, that's OPM ticker, and Ian discusses the news that a company they acquired in June 2017, Positive Cashflow Finance Limited, has successfully achieved the first of its earn-out targets. Also, as it's a Monday, Malki, Oil and Gas Sector Authority, talks about the following companies: President Energy, Echo Energy, Sound Energy, and Amerisa Resources. I also have two lists, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs. By the way, you can see these lists, 10 of them on each list, on the front page of Vox. That's voxmarkets.co.uk.
Want to get live push notification alerts whenever a company you follow releases an RNS? Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Robert Price, Chairman of Highlands Natural Resources. HNR is a ticker there. Robert, thanks for joining me.
Well, Justin, it's always a pleasure to be here on Vox Markets. Thanks for having me.
No problem. It's a pleasure. I know you've got a lot going on, and I think there's pretty much four segments of the business, and we'll go into detail in each one of those segments in a bit. But before we do, Robert, for people not familiar with the company, could you give them a brief summary as to what Highlands Natural Resources is all about, please?
Certainly, Justin. Well, we've been drilling shale wells in the U.S. I think I've mentioned before, Justin, that the United States is overtaking Russia, Saudi Arabia, with its oil and gas production. And so we're a small company, and we're playing a small role in that. But we've been drilling some of the most successful wells in the shale revolution here in the United States, and we have been expanding our acreage position, first of all. Second of all, we have over 220,000 acres in Montana, and we have been drilling for and testing for methane and helium. We have discovered it. We are looking at its economic viability right now. But along with that, we have a really exciting project in that we have, in the dewatering process for the methane and helium, we have a lot of water. And so we have developed a segment of the business. It's called Highlands Water Resources, where we will be growing that business. And as we grow that business and dewater, we believe the methane and helium may really come on stronger than it is right now. So there's the shell, there's our Montana project and what we're working on with the water rights. We have DT Ultravert, patented technology for parent well protection and refracking, and then our nitrogen discovery in Kansas.
Excellent stuff. Well, let's go into those in depth. Let's start off with the shale projects. I know you've got to East Denver and West Denver. Let's start off with East Denver. What's happening there then, Robert?
Yeah, so, Justin, we drilled the first two wells in East Denver. We took a larger percentage of working interest in them. These two wells have produced up to 300,000 barrels to date, which is pretty incredible wells. They're in the top 3% of the wells in the DJ Basin. So we executed on those first two wells. These wells are very expensive, and so we partnered with Halliburton and True Drilling to drill the next six wells and potentially many more wells after that. Now, the next six wells, they've been drilled, they've been cased, they've been partially fracked, but we came into some logistic issues, Justin. We ran out of water, and Colorado has experienced one of its worst droughts in recent times, and so we had to slowdown on the fracking operations, we had to stockpile water. And so we have our water, and we will begin fracking operations in the early part of November. After the frack is completed in December, we'll begin flowback. Mm-hmm. The flowback operations will take a couple weeks. We'll drill out the plugs. We'll flow it back. And so we'll be producing these wells towards the end of December, early January. Now, Justin, mm-hmm. We have a smaller working interest. We have 7.5% of all the wells and all the future wells carried interest by True and Halliburton. So Highlands doesn't pay any of the drilling completion costs. It's a carried interest. Mm-hmm. Well, so if these next six wells are as good as the first two wells, Highlands should be producing in excess of $600,000 in revenue every month. Now, they're shale wells, so it declines fairly quickly, but that cash flow is very significant to Highlands, and that should be kicking in January. Now, Justin, there's many opportunities here in the DJ Basin, and so we've been quietly leasing another project. Now, acreage costs can go $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, even $20,000 per acre to lease for the oil and gas rights, because many of these shale plays are very low risk and they have good returns, as we've proven with East Denver. So the acreage price is fairly high. We, during 2018, our lease campaign on our other shale project, what we call West Denver, we've slowly been accumulating acres, and now we're up to 4,800 acres. And that amount will be growing as well, because our lease campaign is continuing. So we have just filed with the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission what we call drilling and spacing units. So we filed those last week, and then we will be filing this next week up to 100 permits to drill wells on our West Denver project. And Justin, much like our business model with East Denver, we are choosing to raise money through both private equity and our existing strategic partners to drill these wells. And so if you can imagine, we have eight wells right now that should be generating revenue on a monthly basis, which is significant for a small company. Mm-hmm. And now we have a project where we can have over 100 wells. So we're really looking forward to pulling that project together and getting our first wells drilled. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty much a summary of our shale play right now here in Colorado.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's move along then to the Highlands Water Resources and the Montana update you released recently. Take us through that. What's happening with the water here?
Yeah. Well, Justin, it's interesting how opportunities present themselves and how we're providing opportunities to all of our shareholders. So in Montana, we know we've discovered methane. We know we discovered helium. And we know in order to unlock that resource from this deeper horizon called the Muddy Formation, we have to produce a lot of water. And so early on, we are going through the dewatering process. And so what happens in a dewatering play, and there's been very successful plays here in the United States, particularly coal bed methane, when you take the water off of the formation, the gas expands and you produce, in many cases, large amounts of natural gas. Mm-hmm. So up in Montana, we started the dewatering process, and we had a surface pit that we put the water on. We lined it. We were there. The state of Montana approved our surface pit. And so as we increased the water from the Muddy Formation well, the gas and helium increased. But the water was so prolific, we filled the pit up in no time. The pit could handle about 200,000 barrels of water, And we are producing upward to thousands of barrels of water a day. Well, Justin, to go to the next step on the dewater and on the muddy. Now, the Eagle's a different formation. We're testing that right now. We're getting real positive results on that. But we are, we're still in the testing phase on the Eagle. But back to the muddy. The muddy, as we, so to exploit this resource, we need to drill a disposal well, and we need to dispose of that water in the disposal well. Mm-hmm. Well, it's an expensive process. And so what we know, we've discovered methane, helium, and water. And so we are fortunate that we are on the border of the Powder River Basin. The Powder River Basin is probably one of the most emerging, exciting shale plays in the United States, next to the Permian. Someone quoted the Powder River Basin as being the Saudi Arabia of shale. Mm-hmm. Why is that, Justin? Well, here in the Denver-Julesburg Basin, we have the Codell and the Niobrara formations. We have two formations that we can drill and have really good shale wells. But up in the Powder River Basin, they have many more formations. And so that whole basin is just exploding with the likes of Anadarko, Chesapeake, Devon, EOG, that are drilling it up. And what we found out from East Denver is, you know, water is very precious. And in an arid climate, and with this drought that we've experienced in Colorado, water is going to become a major problem for the Powder River Basin. So we are in discussions right now with some of the water rights companies and some of the operators in the Powder River Basin to take our produced water from Montana and send it to the Powder River Basin for fracking. Now, you know, what are the advantages of doing that? Well, first of all, the industry does not need to use fresh water. Mm-hmm. For that, which is normally used for domestic purposes and agricultural purposes. We can use produced water. Our water is not drinkable. It's a little salty, but we can use it for fracking. So first of all, it minimizes the demand for the water in the Powder River Basin. Second of all, we're able to dewater the muddy formation much quicker. And so we can, the methane and helium, hopefully, will be very profitable. We don't know that. But as we start the dewatering process by selling the water, hopefully it'll turn the lights on there. But we don't have to have the expense of drilling a disposal well. Mm-hmm. And lastly, we're able to sell the water. So it can be an additional revenue source. And so we are in discussions with several parties on how we exploit this water resource, first of all. But we are testing new equipment on our East Denver location where we are taking produced water and we're purifying it and we're able to sell it back to. So the arrangement is we get the water, the operator pays us to take the water, and then we sell the fresh water back to them. So it's a very interesting business model. And so we're working on that as well from a water resource standpoint, Justin.
That's, it's amazing, isn't it? Opportunity, really, when you think of it. So, I mean, at the moment, do you have any idea how much you can charge for the water?
Oh, my goodness. I mean, it's the price varies, but generally speaking, it's $1 to $3 per barrel.
Okay.
To be able to sell the water.
Yeah.
And when you're talking having billions of barrels of water, that adds up pretty quickly. And the industry needs the water to frack with.
Yeah.
And the Powder River Basin, Justin, they've been constrained because there's two different, there's Crosslink and then slickwater fracks. Slickwater fracks use a lot more water, mm-hmm. first of all. And they're a lot more effective. Well, the industry has had to go back to Crosslink in these certain gels because they don't have the water. Mm-hmm. Highlands has the water. So it really is going to help the industry out as they begin to develop the resource in the Powder River Basin.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Well, let's move on to DT Ultravit, which is your refracking and parent well production technology. What's happening there, Robert?
Well, Justin, when we patented the technology, it had two main applications. First, refracking. Second, parent well protection. We've tried it on parent well protection, and it works. And we continue to have discussions with independent and major oil and gas companies for its application. We believe in addition to the parent well protection, the refracking is going to be a very important part of Highlands. And so we are in discussions with companies right now to use the technology to refrack not only vertical well bores, but horizontal well bores. And let's just take, for example, in the Denver-Julesburg Basin. You have vertical well bores that historically refracts have worked on. But the industry has forgot about these vertical well bores because the horizontal well bores, you can deploy much more capital and get much more rates of return. But the vertical well bores are still there. And there is ample opportunity to use the technology to refract those. And so there's going to be more to come on that. But we're working with companies on refracking wells, particularly in the DJ. Mm-hmm. And what we've seen so far is the economics, particularly using DT Ultravert technology, is very promising.
Yeah, okay. And finally, what's happening on the nitrogen side of your business there?
That is, I mean, as excited as we are on the Shell and the revenue that we're generating every month and the opportunity to increase that revenue with our West Denver project over and over, and as excited as we are on the water resource to be able to sell water to the Powder River Basin, and as excited as we are on the potential of refracts and generating revenue on those refracts in the DJ, this has been truly an exciting project. We looked for nitrogen. We have brought on a consultant that deals with the nitrogen market, has been in the business for the past 20 years, and knows how to sell nitrogen, both gaseous and liquefied nitrogen. And so we've discovered it, and we've previously announced that we're in advanced discussions with companies to sell the nitrogen. And so here in Kansas, Justin, mm-hmm. we're in the Hugoton Basin. Mm-hmm. The Hugoton Basin is produced more helium than any place in the entire world for the last 100 years. And so consequently, there's helium liquefaction plants, and there's several of them. Well, those plants can liquefy our nitrogen. And so we are in discussions with strategic partners. And I just want to emphasize advanced discussions with strategic partners to sell our nitrogen, not only from a liquid form, but a gaseous form too. In addition to that, Justin, we announced in our last corporate update that we are testing. We have minor amounts of both helium and argon. And so we have a unit on location right now that is concentrating the helium and the argon. And this is, again, the helium has been well established in the area. The argon is very unique. It's underground argon. And so we'll be updating once we get those tests. But the concentration with our machine has been going very well. So we have nitrogen. Hopefully we'll be selling nitrogen in the near future. And then we're testing for both the helium and the argon that we have on location.
Mm-hmm. Marvellous stuff. Well, listen, Robert, you've got a lot going on. And if there is someone listening right now who's not following the story but likes the sound of what you're doing, in summary, it's going to be a hard summary, give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
Justin, we're generating revenue today. We're going to be increasing revenue in January. We have opportunities to bring much more revenue in Shell. But on top of all that, we are exposing the shareholders to really big upside projects.
Excellent stuff. Robert, listen, it's very good to chat to you, and hopefully we can catch up again in the not-too-distant future. Speak soon.
Justin, it's always a pleasure. Thanks again for having me.
With Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Ian Smith, Chief Executive Officer of 1PM Group. That's OPM ticker. Ian, thanks for joining me.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Now, you've had some news out of late, and this is positive cash flow achieved first year earnout. And we'll get into detail of that in a bit. Before we do, Ian, for people listening to the podcast, never heard of the company, not familiar with it, can you give us a summary as to what you're all about, please?
Yeah, of course. So 1PM, actually the name is derived from one payment monthly, which gives you a clue that we're a moneylender. We're set up to provide finance to businesses in the smaller end of the SME scale, and we also arrange finance for consumers in terms of vehicle and property finance, although we don't fund those particular deals ourselves. We act as a broker for consumer finance. So our main reason to exist is to lend money to small business. Thanks. And what we decided to do over the years is to set our stall out to be a multi-product provider to small businesses. In many ways, small companies just need cash to fund and expand their businesses, and we can tailor the funding need to their purposes. So we provide asset finance, loan finance, vehicles, and an invoice finance. That's the range of products that SMEs require.
Excellent stuff. And I suppose this space has changed a lot, hasn't it, in the last 10 years or so?
Yes, it has. So 1PM was originally formed in the year 2000, actually, and floated on AIM in 2006, but became a prime lender following the financial crisis and has grown steadily ever since sort of 2008, 2009. And really during that period, the high street banks have really moved, in their words, upmarket to deal with larger companies and perhaps to lend money based on sort of computerized decision-making rather than to have lots of people looking at credit underwriting, for example. And as we all know, the kind of the bank manager on the high street has effectively disappeared. So the smaller SMEs find that they're having to go to alternative finance providers like ourselves rather than relying on the local bank manager. And that's where we've stepped in to meet the unmet need for the financing for their businesses.
Yeah. And what's the sort of size of the market then, Ian?
Well, there's around 5 million SMEs in the UK. Now, around 30% of those will be permanent non-borrowers, so they're not all going to borrow money. But of the 70% that do borrow money, only 6%, the statistic goes, actually get funding from their clearing bank, from the bank that they do their day-to-day business with. So all those companies are having to go to alternative finance providers like ourselves to provide the finance. So it's a substantial market. Smaller SMEs in the UK are genuinely the engine room of the UK economy, and they all need support and finance.
Yeah. And before we get into this news out today, just give us an overview. Okay, I know your financial results were out recently, so give us an overview of how you're doing.
Yeah, well, we're doing very well. We're seeing good, robust levels of demand. In our language, that's origination. So new business origination month to month is holding up well. That allows us to generate substantial revenue. So 30 million revenue we reported in the year to the 31st of May 2018, and that resulted in just under £8 million of the pre-tax profit. That's all been fully published and reported now. And that's as a result of the buy and build strategy that we've been executing over the past 3 years. So we've acquired 7 businesses in the past 3 years in order to provide this full range of products that SMEs require. And one of those acquisitions that we'll come on to in a moment is Positive Cash Flow. But yep, results are holding up well and in line with market expectations. So we're delighted with progress.
Yeah, in fact, take us through the detail of this, because when I first saw the RNS, I thought, oh, you've achieved positive cash flow. And I thought, hang on, that's the way beyond that. But so what is positive cash flow? And explain, achieves first year earnout. Explain this, if you could.
Yes, of course. So 18 months ago, we decided that we needed to introduce invoice finance to our range of products that we provide. And we acquired 2 businesses, actually, in the invoice financing space. The UK market is genuinely split sort of north and south between companies that operate in the north and the south in providing invoice finance. And the company that we acquired in the north is a company called Positive Cashflow Finance Limited. They're based in Manchester, run by a very capable and very experienced management team there. And as part of the acquisition, the management team was very confident about their potential to grow the business going forward. That's why we wanted them to be part of the group. So part of the acquisition consideration was tied to them achieving their forecast going forward. So in very simplistic terms, we paid them some money on day one of doing the acquisition. We paid them some deferred consideration over a period of time. And then we paid them some consideration in the form of this earnout, which is a payment tied to the achievement of certain profit forecasts over the 3-year period following the acquisition. And the announcement this morning is simply to say, and very pleasingly, that the guys at Positive have hit their profit targets for the first of the 3 years. And so we're issuing some shares to give them the consideration that we agreed at the time of the acquisition.
Excellent stuff. And as far as going forward, how is business looking?
So in relation to Positive Cash Flow, it's looking strong, as it is for each of our businesses across the group. What's very pleasing across the group is that there's no one business that's storming ahead and others that are not performing, and thus on average they're okay. All of the businesses actually are performing in line with or better than their budgets, and Positive Cash Flow is no exception. There's obviously a very strong sort of hinterland of small businesses up in the northwest where they predominantly operate, and we're seeing good levels of business coming through and new clients that are being won on a month-to-month basis. And there are something like 44,000 SMEs around the UK that are regularly using invoice finance. And it's a core product, a bit like a bank overdraft now. So we see very good prospects for continuing growth and positive cash flow.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, one final thing, Ian. On the podcast, on the daily podcast, I highlight the top 5 most followed companies on Vox Markets. And so here's a chance to get into that list, hopefully. So give someone listening right now, if they're not following the story, give them 3 reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, the first reason is that the SME sector is underserved in terms of finance. So we're an alternative financer providing finance to meet an unmet need where the banks no longer operate. That's the first reason. The second reason is a business like ours, being a funder and a lender, we have strong visibility of earnings. So there's about £20 million worth of unearned interest in the deals that we've written to date and are lending on our balance sheet, and that will come through in terms of revenue going forward. And then thirdly, although we regard ourselves as a growth company, we're paying a dividend. So we pay an interim and a final dividend. So any investors looking at our business would share in the returns that we're making.
Marvellous stuff. Good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much, Ian.
Thank you very much, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is oil and gas sector specialist Malky. You all right, fella?
I'm extremely well, thanks, Justin. Yourself?
Yeah, not too bad. What's the oil scene looking like? There's a bit of controversy around the Saudis, isn't there? What's happening with the oil price at the moment?
Well, I mean, there's no doubt that the problems in Turkey could actually, I mean, I don't think they will, but they could force a big oil price shock, because, of course, you do have the situation whereby, you know, the Americans and the Saudis are sort of tentatively sort of poking each other with a sort of longish stick.
Yeah.
And the Saudis said quite amusingly last week that if they thought that $80 oil angered President Trump, then just see what $200 oil will do to him. But my guess is that they will, well, as I say, they'll fence around each other. And but it's not good news in the sense that it creates another problem at a time when the market is still in that this quarter I've mentioned to you before being very tight. Mm-hmm. And that situation is not going to change until the turn of the year. I look at the price, having been away for a few days, I look at the price, and West Texas is 69.42 and Brent is 80.22 as we speak. So, you know, no one's going to worry too much when oil prices are at those levels.
Why does it have that discrepancy then between the WTI and Brent?
It's a combination of reasons. Obviously, international demand. Brent has been the sort of long-term price trader, traded marker crude for a very long time through, from Nigeria and the North Sea and so on. It's deemed to be a better quality crude as well, and certainly some refiners will only use that. And in the West Texas crude, it's a combination of the reverse of that, plus the fact that they are selling it, until recently, obviously, they only had their own market to sell it into.
Yeah.
Don't forget, it was only last year that when Trump came in that he allowed exporting of U.S. crude, which hadn't been allowed for a long time. So when you've only got your home market, you take what price they give you.
Because that's quite a big $11, quite a big difference, isn't it?
Yeah, I watch the differential every day in the blog, and 11 is about as high as it's been for a long time. And it got down to, I mean, it has been the other way around, not as much as this, but it has got down to a small premium. But the other thing is that actually, there's only so much oil that from the Permian and so on, the shale, they can get out and transport at the moment because their pipelines are completely full. Mm-hmm. So there's actually a huge discount between West Texas and some of the crude over in, say, Midland, Texas, and so on. And Canadian crude is at a big discount as well. So, you know, it's very interesting looking at the different internationally traded marker crudes.
Yeah. Okay. Right, let's get on to stocks. What are you looking at, Malky?
Well, I mean, one or two of them sound like a bit of same old, but one or two stocks are delivering the goods and has been away. But there hasn't been a huge amount of news in the sector, but I noticed that where they have, it's quite important. And I noticed that President Energy, which I mentioned to you before, because it seems to be one of those stocks which is a laggard in terms of the value of the shares, has not yet by any means caught up with the value that the company are creating. And they've announced already today that they've got a three-well drilling program in the Puerto Flores, Estancia Viejo area in Argentina. And the first of those three wells, it's only, as I said, only a little while that I announced that they were doing the three wells, has been successfully drilled and cased, cemented and logged, and ahead of time and on budget, and is awaiting completion. But what they have said is that the results are at the upper end of their expectations. They've got oil shows in three different formations, which is very good, some of which has already been brought to surface. And, of course, they've got what they call commendable gas readings. So going into, a three-well program to get a really good well, ahead of expectations as your first one, very positive indeed. And, of course, the target to add to their existing production was from these three wells was 600 barrels a day. And whilst, only the first well has been tested and so on, but hasn't even been completed, and the other two have yet to be drilled and completed, they're showing increased confidence, as they say, with their target. I think that 600 barrels a day could be, pushed past easily if these three wells come in well. And, of course, I remember saying to you before that this is a company where you know, they did a raise last November, 9p, and since the beginning of this year alone, production has now gone over 2,700 barrels a day. If they add this 600 or more, we'll be probably nearer 3,500 barrels a day. I wouldn't be surprised. Free cash flow is excellent. The realizations over there are high. They were, when I last spoke to Peter Levine, it was $2.5 million a month coming in. Must be more than that now, and will be after these wells. So, you know, I've got a feeling that, you know, that this company could be, you know, making out extremely well. The market just haven't taken on board yet quite how attractive it is. So President Energy is one to be kept a very close eye on.
Yeah, do you know what? I do like their chart, though, because they're at now. They've risen of late, consolidated, and they're 8p now, and that was previous resistance back in sort of May last year. Hit that level a couple of times, couldn't get above it, and then it went above it in sort of October of 2017, and since then it's been up and down, but it's come back down to that level, so that would provide some kind of support, you'd suggest. So so yeah, it'd be interesting to see if it goes, if it holds on to that. So it should do, because it's quite strong resistance there as well. So interesting level.
I would have thought so. I think that when we get the test results from these wells, we'll be showing a significant uplift in production.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, what's next, Marky? Okay.
Well, we might as well stay in Argentina, because I noticed that Eco Energy have announced this morning that they too have been completing production well into. They've done four well interventions on the Canadian Salto field in Fraction D in Argentina. This is very canny stuff, to be honest. It's in the field which used to produce, you know, only a reasonably modest amount. You know, literally, I mean, it's they were producing. They're now producing 115 barrels a day. It used to be only 5 barrels a day, but they're beginning to bring in one or two of these pilot wells, which are very, you know, very inexpensive to drill. I mean, $100-$150 net to them. And they'll be bringing in some quite decent production here. I mean, as I say, they've gone up to 115 barrels a day at the moment. They've got something like, you know, a potential, you know, 100 wells on the in the field, which they could take a look at. They clearly won't do them all, but I mean, if they were to work over just a few of these at very inexpensive costs, it'll go a huge way to funding the business. And it's very, very good, very stable cash generation with plenty of upside at $80 a barrel. Mm-hmm. So, you know, don't forget that this is the early stage development for Eco. They are moving into the really big bit, the Tapiaiki, with the seismic in a month or so's time. But they've done this very well. They've already started. I mentioned to you before that they've produced well in these areas, and they're increasing production at very minimal cost.
Yeah. And again, another one where, when I look at a chart, I never like to buy a company that's share price has gone ballistic. But I mean, this has, but almost a year ago, over a year ago now. So it's really settled down. You know, it's in that level where it's a decent level in comparison to where it has been. So again, you know, things going on. It's funny, isn't it? People like to buy when the news is hot and it's frenetic and jump in when the share price is rising. Then all of a sudden, when there's been a bit quieter, people not buying so much, people don't like to buy. Well, that's the time you should be buying, really. Quiet time is when you should be buying, you know?
Exactly, yeah. So cool. The other one to look at, I mean, I've just come back from a few days in Morocco with Sound Energy.
Yeah.
Sound, you know, I mentioned to you the other day that having had a very long quiet spell, by their standards, saying very little and drilling nothing for a long period of time. And that started announcing in sort of July and August that a lot of things have been kicking on nicely in Morocco. And they announced last week that they'd spudded for the first time for a long time their TE9 well in the Tendrara prospect in eastern Morocco. And you know, there's no doubt that things are gearing up significantly here in Morocco. You know, there's all sorts of activity. They're talking about a gas sales agreement. They're talking about a feed for the project. They're talking about a pipeline, and they're talking about gas being, as they moved into the necessary stations. And so, you know, these are things which will be paid for by other people. So to be honest, it's important now for Sound to drill these next three wells, T9, 10 and 11, see if they can confirm the existing Tadji discoveries and potentially some of the lower stuff, and as well, which would be incredibly profitable. So things are moving ahead sharply. Also, we've found out while we're out there that Repsol are preparing for a big campaign on their adjacent acreage, and of course the other acreage is owned by Shell. You know, I think we're going to hear a lot more about Sound over the next few months, and there were a lot of people on the trip who were getting very excited because, you know, things are coming to a head at in this eastern part of Morocco.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, cool stuff. All right, what's next, Marky?
Just finally, I noticed while I was away last week that Amerisur, which has been a very difficult stock, but another one which is bringing in significant value. They announced that the spud of Indico 1, which is the well with ONGC on CPO 5 in the north, is imminent. I expect it in the next few days. But more importantly, I mean, they've got, you know, 10 or 11 million barrels to look at there. But they're now talking about the fact that there are three wells in that particular program. This will be followed by Aquila 1 and Sol 1. Not quite as big prospects, but if any of these come in, particularly the first one, there'll be an absolutely massive plus for Amerisur. And, you know, I would expect, you know, the market, you know, to be, you know, massively pleased. Obviously, it hasn't spudded yet, but it's imminent. But I like the fact they've already got two behind it. And they've got a very big exploration program. I think it's on like 18 wells coming up over the next 15 months or so to the end of next year. And they're still producing 5,000 barrels a day, day in, day out, with very, very good economics. Their rationalization, their realizations are good. Free cash flow is substantial, as we know. And they're continuing to spud wells and test, for example, in the T-Sands well, where they were disappointed that there were no N-Sands, but the T-Sands well looks like it might be good enough to have an appraisal well on it. And if that's the case, then having an appraisal well there will show that they probably, yeah, they've got a higher level of production than we had thought beforehand. So this is another one where the markets, when you look at the chart, you think, God, what's happened here?
Yeah.
But actually, it's one where the market is very much has been left behind and hasn't worked out quite how good it could be.
I know. Do you know what? It's a nightmare of charts. Like I said, we've said before. I mean, I thought I had a good bottom in this. I called a good bottom here, but again, it's had so many false dawns. It's broken above that 200-day moving average so many times. Looks like it's going to go higher, then all of a sudden it's slumped to a lower level. So
yeah,
it's so annoying to know where the bottom is. But I'm going to say, when in doubt, always think about a round number. 10 pence, it won't go lower than that.
Yeah.
So there we are. Marvellous stuff. Yeah, I mean, because like I say, you've been talking about this on a fundamental level, it's looking good, but technically in the chart, it's always grinding lower. It's already odd.
Yeah, yeah, and I can work it out. I mean, I know a bit about charts, but not enough. But the fundamentals are very strong.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous stuff, Malky. Thanks for that, and we'll catch up next week.
Yeah, look forward to it.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Big Dish, PLC, that's Dish, ticker. At four, Asia Met Resources, ARS, ticker. At three, IQAI Limited, IQAI, ticker there. At two, Live Company Group. I had David, the executive chairman, on the podcast on Friday. Worth listening to. I bought some stock in that company. I liked them so much. It's like, what's it, Victor Kayam. I liked it so much I bought the company. But I've also done a video. Now, subscribe to my videos, by all means, on my YouTube channel. And I talk about why I bought some stock in that company. And number one, most followed company, Jangada Mines, J-A-N ticker. I did mention those in the weekend podcast, also on that video that I talked about Live Company Group. All right, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, Western Mining, senior management appointment. At four, Feedback PLC, expansion of European customer base. At three, Vast Resources. Vast Resources wins best mining development. At two, Echo Energy. Well interventions result in production uplift. And number one, most liked company, or most liked RNS, I should say, came from Tlou Energy, or Tlou, T-L-O-U. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.